Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to Getting Savvy in Health, Wealth, and Beauty. Important to note that everything is for entertainment purposes only. Please do speak and meet with a financial advisor before making any investment decisions. And also, please meet and speak with your GP before making any health or beauty decisions.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 3. I've been traveling a lot this week, Melissa. And then, of course, there was Thanksgiving. But here we are Friday. I'm casual in a black t-shirt, and this is as good as it's going to get. But the show will be great.
There so. You go. Not, you're not in a glam cocktail dress like last week.
No glam.
How was
no
the glam. Event?
It was great. Okay. It was the chief of police for Peel Region Gala. Spectacular. Amazing. So always great. I love seeing, I hate to say, I like seeing men in uniforms. It's a good look.
Totally. Women in evening gowns, men in uniform.
Exactly. What about you? Your week?
My week's been kind of just, boring work, focusing on, staying in at night, taking the kids to their programs. I'm trying to be very boring this week because next week I'm going to Paris.
Oh,
on a girls' trip. So I know we'll be going out a lot. So this week I'm just, work hard so next week can play hard, so to speak. Well, with museums and lunches, of course.
Right. Museums and lunches, playing hard. Exactly. In Paris. I like that. Work hard, play hard. But it's funny because I was talking to somebody, I've mentioned him on the podcast before without mentioning a name, but huge in the healthcare industry. And, I was talking to him not too long ago, and I'm a big believer in the 80-20 rule, right? Like 80% of the time, be good and everything you can do to the best of your knowledge and ability, and 20%, let's give ourselves a break. Mm-hmm. He and I were saying, at this age and stage, I really feel like I need to be 90-10. I'm not there, but I feel, and he said it at the same time, we were like, we need to be 90-10. What was also interesting though, Melissa, is, we were at an investor meeting this past week in LA, really, really interesting. It's private equity. So companies that aren't publicly traded yet, so many interesting companies that they have in their portfolio. And I knew this going in. I always know this when I go to these meetings, everybody there, like the men are svelte.
Yeah.
They're 50, 55, 60. There's not an ounce of fat. Their skin looks perfect. It's, it's like they're really playing the AAA game. Like they are they're not even 90-10. These guys are like 99% good.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're saying. I read something that like having abs is the new flex.
Oh.
Like they're talking about like as the new, like they were talking about like Jeff Bezos, right? How he's like, he's so wealthy. He's so successful. He's so smart. He's all these things, but now he has abs. And all of a sudden, that's like how you know you've made it, right? So like, it's true. Like, and they often say like those who have it all. And often if you're wanting to excel in one area, you want to challenge yourselves in other areas too. Mm-hmm. But I agree with you, like 80-20, you want to be on, working hard, being healthy, eating well 80% of the time. 20% is when you can have your, days off, maybe not eating as good. But I agree with you. There was a study in the Wall, there was this article in the Wall Street Journal that also said that once you reach your 40s, your body's less forgiving, right? So it takes longer to recover. And so you're quite right that the 80-20 maybe is a little bit more like 90-10.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right. Well,
what's that?
I was on my 90 this week.
Yeah, you're doing 90 this week. I'm just getting back to 80. Mm-hmm. But if you look at pictures of Jeff Bezos years ago, he does not look like he does today.
Oh, no. That's like they always focus on the Kardashians. Like, look how different these women are. But men, too. Or Elon Musk, mm-hmm. both of them, Elon all of a sudden now is fit, has hair. Yeah, they're taking care of themselves. And it's not just women, it's men too, which is why this podcast is so important on health, wealth, and beauty, because it's not just women who are interested in their aesthetic, right? And how they're presenting themselves to the world. It's men too, so.
And it's so noticeable. I sit there and I come back so motivated. Interestingly, we were at another investor meeting the prior week. And I think I mentioned this, everybody at the table is an A++ player. They've all got their Aura rings on. They all do cold plunges, all do infrared, the NAD drips. I mean, they're all into this. I think it's important though to point out, Melissa, that yes, does some of this stuff take money? Absolutely. No doubt about it. Mm-hmm. But I also think that there are so many things that we can implement in our lives without money, whether it's like just walking more, knowing what to cut out. I think cutting out the crap is just as important as all these other treatments as well. You know, people say that white bread is the devil.
Yeah.
So.
It, you know, it's, but again, then it goes down to 80-20, 90-10. You know, if you're living a great life and you're being healthy and you're exercising and you're eating fruits and vegetables and lean protein, having a bagel on a Saturday morning
right.
is going to be just fine. Right.
Just fine.
Just fine.
All right. Well, let's get started here a little bit. What's new in health news this week?
So there was a few articles that caught my attention. So one of them was that they found a link between drinking fizzy drinks and increased risk of stroke. And I think the reason it caught my attention was because I drink a lot of sparkling water. And at first I thought, oh God, is that somehow a risk or a link? But no, it turns out they were referring to sugary and even artificially sweetened bubbly drinks. So pop and diet pop. So people that drank more than two of those drinks a day, even if it was diet, had a significantly increased risk. It was linked with a significantly increased risk of stroke. Same with people who drank more than two fruit juices per day.
Fruit juices?
Also, yeah, saw an increased risk of stroke. And coffee drinkers, if you had more than four cups of coffee per day, it was also linked with an increase in stroke. So first you read this, and it makes a good, you know, headline because it catches your attention. And you think, oh no, does this mean I'm going to have, does this cause a stroke? So you have to remember, a link isn't the same thing as causation. So it's saying it was correlated. So why might that be? So, you know, people that are drinking two pops a day or two juices per day might be having other unhealthy lifestyle habits. So maybe they're more sedentary. Maybe they're more overweight because they're drinking all this sugar. Maybe all the sugar, maybe they have more inflammation. Maybe if they're into the diet pop, we've also found now that even if it's a diet pop, it can still increase your cravings for sugar. Mm. It could be sodium levels in those drinks.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think when you read a study like this, you have to think, okay, so drinking a pop isn't going to cause me to have a stroke. No, but what they're saying is if my lifestyle, I am drinking a lot of, you know, carbonated, sweetened or unsweetened, you know, diet beverages and juice, maybe I want to dial that back because there is a link and maybe it's not the healthiest lifestyle. And it did show that there was a decreased link with stroke for people that drank tea. So the more water you drink, the more tea you drink, even sparkling water is okay. You know, that was less linked with risk for stroke.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was, I thought, just kind of like an interesting article that caught my attention. Another thing that I saw was a study done by the Ontario, it was a division of the Ontario Medical Association that put AI scribes in physicians' offices. So they had about 150 doctors and nurse practitioners use these AI scribes. So
what's that?
Exactly. Like, what does that mean?
What is that?
So basically, it's AI or that captured, it could listen to your conversation when you were in with a patient. So let's say I'm here and I'm saying, you know, hi, Catherine, what brings you into the office today? And then we start talking. It's capturing the conversation and then creating a note for me. So it's cutting down on the amount of paperwork and admin that family doctors and other practitioners have to do as well. That's burning them out so much. So there's like a huge burnout in family medicine, huge shortage of family doctors. A lot of people aren't going into the field, they're retiring early or just going into a different area of practice. And part of the reason is because they enjoy the patient encounter, but all the administrative tasks that are often unpaid as well are daunting. And it's our, and these electronic medical records that are supposed to make us more efficient are actually just taking so much time because it used to be a doctor, you know, the old image of a doctor with like illegible handwriting who sees you with a paper chart, scribbles something and off to the next. But at least that way it was easier because the doctor didn't have to focus on keeping a perfect note and writing everything perfectly. He was focusing on the actual doctor-patient interaction. So now what happens is when you see a patient, you know, you don't, you want to be have good rapport. So you don't want to be sitting there typing the whole time you're talking to them. Right. You want to talk to them. And then once they leave, you then have to go and write your note. Well, what this AI scribe did is it listened and then it just summarized the note into Amazing. Like what we call a SOAP format. So SOAP is the subjective. S stands for subjective. So writing down your symptoms, why you're in. O stands for objective. So your physical exam findings, like your blood pressure, the sounds of your heart. And then A and P is assessment and plan. So what this AI scribe did is they listened to the conversation and they were able to create that SOAP note in mm-hmm. your chart. And
amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. I think it will be widely adopted. I mean, at first it seems daunting to learn another new thing. Like, how do I use this AI scribe? It just sounds like
people we'll just press a button.
But hopefully that will be the way it works. Yeah. So I thought that was a really interesting article as well.
Yeah, no, that is. And look, we can all understand why we can be afraid of AI, but I also think it's going to increase productivity levels yeah. to such a degree that will help so many people and allow us to do more things that we can't even imagine. A lot of people are afraid of technology, even going back to farmers and ag, and what will we do in terms of the jobs if we have tractors? Everybody else loses their job, but it doesn't. It just creates more productivity, and therefore those people can go on and do other things.
That's just it. So it's not like, you know, it's going to replace the job of doctor. Right. It's just going to modify how the practice is done.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Let me give you a little bit of a market recap, and do stop me if something okay. doesn't make sense and or if your eyes start to glaze over.
Okay.
Okay. To me, this is the most interesting thing. No, health and wealth and beauty is for sure. Okay, so I'm going to start, as we talked about last time, the U.S. markets are very different from the Canadian markets because the composition is so different in terms of they are heavyweights in technology, much more so than we are in Canada. Canada, we're much more natural resources. Of course, banks and telecom also big weighting versus the United States because we have fewer companies.
Got it.
And a more simplistic economy, really. So let me start with those U.S. markets. U.S. markets are on track for 6 weeks of straight gains. The markets have been going up for 6 weeks. The S&P 500, so the 500 large companies or 500 large companies in the States, is up 23% on a year-to-date basis. The best performance we've actually seen since 1997.
Wow.
Yes. And again, you know, we go back to, we talked a little bit about last week, and I always like to look at this. What's the bull case? What's the bear case? And the bull case is, you know, looking forward to having the U.S. election behind. It's less than 30 days out. So that could act as a tailwind because there's so much uncertainty in terms of who gets into power and therefore what policies will be implemented. So that being behind us is actually a tailwind. And you have to remember that markets are what's called a forward-looking pricing mechanism. In other words, they're looking forward to future events, not what's happening necessarily today. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's today, but they're pricing in what's going to happen in the future, rightly or wrongly. Also, seasonality, the back half of the year heading into Christmas tends to be positive for markets. There's something called seasonality when we invest. The end of September, beginning of October tends to be a poor performing time period, not the case this year, which was interesting. We also have the view that maybe we won't have a recession for the past year and a half, 2 years. Many strategists at the biggest Wall Street firms have been calling for a recession that has not happened. That's adding as a tailwind. We also got this week.
What do you mean when you say a tailwind?
Tailwind. So think of a headwind. Think of mm-hmm. if you're flying in a plane and you're flying to the West Coast, the air moves from west to east. So when you fly from California to, which I just did, to mm-hmm. Toronto, it's a shorter amount of time than flying because you've got a tailwind behind you. The wind's pushing you.
Okay.
As opposed to when you're flying Toronto to California, you have a headwind because you're going against the wind. So the tailwind okay. just gives you more oomph. So in the markets, it just means the markets, it acts as a tailwind to the markets pushing you higher.
So it's giving momentum to it?
Giving momentum to it.
Okay.
Yep. Tailwind. It's like, you know, tailwind would be, it would have been the U.S. elections. It was for a little bit in June, July time period among recession recession concerns. We also this week had core retail sales that were up 1.7% year over year. If you remember last week, we talked about the results at Costco, which I thought were really quite strong. But we also know that that was maybe a pull forward effect because of the hurricanes. people buying goods ahead of the hurricane, because you talked about that. And then also the Amazon, you know, sales day, they had a big, big day, but it seems as though the consumer is doing a little bit better. And what does that tell me as an investor? Maybe I want to take a look at some of those consumer stocks that have been hit hard because it concerns a recession. In other words, they might show some attractive valuations. So that's why I look at, that's why we all look at some of this economic data, not just to kind of look at it and here's a number, but what does it mean in terms of how I want to invest? If the consumer is falling off the cliff, then I'm really concerned because it's about 65% of the US economy. If it's actually showing some strength, maybe there's a stock that I can buy that will, you know, respond correspondingly to that strength in the retail number. And I want to point out as well, Melissa, we talked about last Friday was the kickoff for US earnings, third quarter earnings. And why is that important? You get a read on what the company is doing. It gives you an indication in terms of what the economy is doing. And sometimes there can be confirmation that the stock is doing well. So as an example, I don't know if you looked at your portfolio today, but Netflix is up 10% today, one day. Yay.
I didn't look at it today, actually. And this is what we'll talk about also. You know, when I do invest, I invest for the long term. Like, I'm not someone that trades often.
Right.
And so I don't really look at it that often. And actually, I did see also in the Wall Street Journal, they said that there's an actual correlation when the stock market is down, more people go to their family doctor and ask for antidepressants.
What?
Which I thought is crazy. Yep.
That is crazy.
Yeah. And that's when you know that you're checking it too often. And I always tell this to people when they're coming in for weight loss as well. Don't check your weight every day because your mood can be affected by the number on the scale. The same way that your mood can be affected by the number you see. So if you own a lot of Netflix stock and you check today and it's up, you might be in a great mood.
Right.
Conversely, if it's down, you might be really down in the dumps and be depressed. Yeah. And it's the same, and then it causes you to make bad decisions. So you might say, this is awful and I'm going to sell when at the wrong time. Or when it comes to weight loss, people that check their weight, it might be a little bit of a blip. Maybe you're getting your period. Maybe you're just bloated. Maybe you had a salty meal and they see their weights up and they're like, screw this. This diet doesn't work. I'm just going to eat whatever I want. And then they do the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Anyhow, that's just a little, okay, back to the market.
And there's actually something later I want to ask you about with respect to salt. And, and bloating, and there's a reason why. Okay, so, but with Netflix, just so you know, their revenue came in better than expected, their net additions, so their new subscribers, net additions means new subscribers, less anybody who got off the platform, that was higher than expected as well, 5 million versus 4.5. So the stock is doing very well.
Great.
Yes, and so I would just point that out. I also took a look. It's up 62,000% since the stock is
That was a good buy. I'm so happy I bought that. Yep. And I'm happy.
Not necessarily since you bought it 10 years ago, but since it went public. It's up 62,000.
Okay. Yeah.
The other item to look at just in terms of bank earnings, a number of the big US banks reported their most recent results and have done better than expected. So that's another positive. It shows you a bit of the state of the US economy, because they did indicate stable credit. So as opposed to credit defaults, people defaulting on their loans, they actually, the results came in with stable results. So that's good. It's a good read on the economy. The capital markets, so when people do a lot of trading and investing, that also shows some optimism, whether it's from companies and corporations or individuals. So the results were good. The XLF, which I own, so that's an ETF that represents financial companies in the States, has been up 2.1% since last Friday when the banks reported. So that's telling you that people are saying, yes, the results were good. I'm willing to buy this. And, you know, maybe we're off to the races. Just real brief here for anybody that owns an Apple phone or product, I always say, why not also take a look at the stock. And Apple's up just by about 1%. They had some stronger sales than expected in China. Sales were up 20% year over year in the past 3 weeks since the iPhone 16 debut. So all of these companies—
Aren't they trying? Is there something in China, like they're giving people a lot of money to try to boost their economy? So maybe there's more hands in population in China and there's more spending. They're trying to like incentivize their spending.
They are. The government is, because the growth has been very slow. And that's also positive. And that's also one of the reasons why the markets have been moving higher, because there is expected further stimulus out of China. Think of how large the economy is, the second largest economy in the world, the first, of course, being the United States. So the ripple effects that the China economy has on all of us, and in particular in Canada as well, with our commodity focus, is significant. So yes, those are all positives. On the bear case, I would just say in the luxury sector, so LVMH, Louis Vuitton, that owns all the luxury brands that we all love, did have disappointing results. Huh. And so did American Express. So that high-end person might be still pulling back a little bit. But sometimes that's an opportunity. Okay, yeah. Just quickly here on the TSX. TSX also on track for another weekly gains. Materials is what's working. So you would ask, well, what's in the materials sector? It's chemicals, it's fertilizers, it's gold, it's steel, it's pulp. That's all doing well. I took a look at the best performing stocks on the TSX. A lot of gold stocks. Barrick Gold is up 29%. Kinross is up 100%. Also in the financial sector, because I know you wanted to take a look at some of the Canadian financials, Investors Group, IGM, that's up by about 39%. So we are seeing some strength in those specific areas. And lastly, I would just say in terms of
I'm going to just, as someone, you're supposed to educate me, but
tell me.
So don't people buy gold when they think that the economy's bad? Is there a correlation between that?
Yes.
As a hedge, like they hold gold when they think, explain that to me.
Okay, so there's a couple of reasons to buy gold. One is people think that it's an inflation hedge. Okay. So if inflation is going higher, they believe that, and it's an inflation hedge, but it's also in conjunction with so many of these central bankers printing money. In other words, there's been a huge distrust of central bankers around the world because they devalue your dollar when they print so much of it, right? If you have anything, if you have too much of anything, it's not as valuable to you.
Yeah.
And so gold, as well as cryptocurrencies, have been bought as a hedge against what central bankers are doing. So there's that aspect. There's also the aspect that people feel like it's a hard asset. And in the wake of uncertainty, I want to know I own gold. Going way back when, you could have traded gold, it had value. So there are those people who believe in that. Then there are those who say, I don't believe I can just take a bar of gold, chop it up, and go to the grocery store and buy some groceries. Right. And then you also have to store gold. And when you store anything in life, there's a cost. It's rent.
Yep.
So there's people who say, I don't believe in buying gold.
That's why I just wear it.
<You're> just joking. Wear the gold. Don't buy it. Yeah. Okay. My husband's closing the door because there's some noise going on. Okay. Moving on. So that's some of the strength that we've seen. What to watch for next week. The Bank of Canada is going to be releasing their most recent monetary policy. The expectation is that they will cut the basis points or interest rate, as we discussed last time, it's the same thing, by 0.5%. So 50 basis points, half a percentage point is the expected rate cut. And why are they doing that, you might ask? There's less inflation. There's softer demand in our economy. Firms are seeing excess capacity, and they've got higher costs of goods. So in other words, the economy's slower. Why not give it a little bit of juice by cutting the rates?
So putting more money in people's pockets so that they can stimulate the economy.
Putting more money in people's pockets and spurring the economy.
Yes, they have some money for Christmas shopping.
Some money for Christmas shopping. Yes, exactly. Okay, so that's the market recap. Let's go on here a little bit and talk to me about something. So we've talked about the difference between a cardiac arrest versus a heart attack. Very fascinating. I don't think most people know that. The other aspect that we always get checked out when we go to the doctor is our blood pressure. What do we need to know about this?
So, okay, blood pressure is an extremely important part of your health that you need to have checked. And it's also one of the reasons it's important to go into the doctor. I mean, during, COVID, when we were used to doing virtual visits, you know, it's all great, but a lot of people weren't getting their basic physical exam done. You're not getting your basic blood pressure checked, and it's an important, it's one of your vital signs. It's a very important thing to know. So what is blood pressure? So blood pressure is essentially the pressure exerted against the walls of your blood, against the walls of your blood vessels. So when we think about blood pressure, it's often two numbers you hear. So 120 over 80 or 140 over 90. So the top numbers are systolic blood pressure and the bottom numbers are diastolic blood pressure. So the systolic blood pressure is the pressure against our artery walls when our heart contracts, beats. Okay, so it's higher number. The diastolic blood pressure is the pressure in our blood vessels when our heart is between beats, so when our heart is relaxed. So that's why you get the two numbers. Okay, so that's one thing to understand. The pulse pressure is the systolic minus the diastolic. Hmm. But that's just something interesting. So if, for example, if your blood pressure is 120 over 80, your systolic is 120, your diastolic is 80, and your pulse pressure is 40.
Okay. I was going to say 40.
There we go. Our math coming in handy. So yeah, so that's what it is. And generally speaking, the higher your pulse pressure, so that difference, the less healthy could be the more increased risk for heart disease you have. So let's say you're 140 over 60, you have a high pulse pressure. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyhow, let's just focus on blood pressure. So what's the ideal blood pressure? Anything average blood pressure is 120 over 80. Anything under that, anything lower that is better as long as you're not dizzy. Okay. So if your blood pressure is 100 over 60 and you feel great, that's a great blood pressure. If the top number is between 120 and 130, that's elevated blood pressure. Okay. Between 130 and 140 on the top and 80 on the 90 in the bottom is stage one hypertension. And stage two hypertension is when you're above 140 over 90. So when I went to medical school, we just learned hypertension, so high tension, high pressure, high blood pressure, is over 140 over 90. And now they've decreased what's considered high blood pressure because it's a silent killer, meaning that a lot of people walk around with high blood pressure and they don't have symptoms. So they don't know their blood pressure is high because it's asymptomatic unless it's skyrocketed. But the longer you have high blood pressure, the more pressure you're doing on your artery walls, the more damage you're doing, the more likely you are to weaken them, the more likely you are to have them form a clot. And these are the things that increase our risk for stroke and increase our risk for heart attack. So hypertension is a risk factor. And they're actually seeing for the first time in younger people, so less than 65, an increase in stroke. And it could be that a lot of young people are walking around with high blood pressure without realizing it. So, you know, I always think about all these wearables, like people are wearing an Apple Watch and people are wearing an Oura Ring and we're tracking all these things like our sleep and our steps. But what's more important to track is your blood pressure. And it's fairly easy to buy a blood pressure cuff. You just go to the pharmacy, you can purchase one. Some of your insurance plans might cover it. And you can take your own blood pressure at home. You put your arm on a table, you put it around you, you press the button, and it will tell you what your blood pressure is. And if you're noticing that it's consistently above, and when I say consistently, because you never want to do anything on a one-off, because it could be affected by if you're really stressed out or if you've just had a huge cup of coffee or things like that. But if it's consistently elevated, then it's something you definitely want to talk to your doctor about.
Can I tell you, I wouldn't even know what time of day to do it because I'm always like running around. Like,
but then that's the time of day, right? Because we always talk about do what's real life, right? So some people that are like, I'm just going to wait until I'm in a bath and I'm that's not real life. Okay. Your real life is how you are. So sometimes, but we're not sure because a lot of people have something called white coat hypertension. What that means is when they see the doctor in the white coat, they get nervous and their blood pressure goes up. And so they say to me, that's not my real blood pressure. I'm just nervous because I'm at the doctor's office. So what we'll sometimes do to get a real read is we'll say to them, okay, you buy a cuff, you do it at home and you tell me the average readings, or I'll send somebody for what's called a 24-hour ambulatory blood pressure monitoring. So they go and they're given a cuff and it records throughout the day and night and then tells me their average reading. So I can see, okay, yeah, that person does have white coat because it's totally normal, but it's only high in my office versus no, that person does have high blood pressure the majority of the time. And then you need to get on a medication to reduce it.
And Melissa, when you put it on your arm, mm-hmm. how tight do you make it? Like you pump until
it automatically does it.
Oh.
They're automatic now. So you just put, you don't have to pump it up. Like I do that when I take a person's blood pressure, but you just press start and it will do it. And it will just pump it and then release it and it will get the reading for you.
Got it. And you know, it's interesting when you said younger people walking around, I was wondering at what age could you almost start to think about doing this, checking your blood pressure?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, even when you go to the pediatrician, sometimes the pediatrician will take kids' blood pressure. I mean, it changes your goals over time. Mm-hmm. But in your 20s, yeah, a lot of women during pregnancy get high blood pressure. Okay. That can be a condition of pregnancy. So in your 20s, you want to, and if you're somebody that drinks a lot of alcohol or smokes cigarettes or vapes or leads a stressful lifestyle, you want to definitely be checking your blood pressure, especially men, you know, between, and women too. I mean, between the ages of 20 and 40, when you're not going into the doctor's office that much, you could be missing this. And that's 20 years of having that pressure against your walls of your artery, weakening them and damaging them.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. What can you do to decrease it?
So in terms of lifestyle, weight loss. So they found these GLP-1 drugs, like Ozempic, are also, they're noticing people, it's lowering their blood pressure. So is that because of the medication or just because people are losing weight? So if you lose weight, that can help lower blood pressure. Eating less sodium and processed foods in the diet, because sodium constricts blood vessels. So less processed foods, less fast foods, less pop, less canned food, you know, things with sodium. Conversely, eating more foods with potassium, so fruits and vegetables, avocados, the potassium salt instead of using the regular, like the salt substitutes.
Oh, I've never heard of that.
Yeah. So if looking at, you know, avocado, potato, broccoli, lettuce, you know, foods, healthy fruits and vegetables.
Okay.
Making sure that you're drinking more water in the day and not relying on pop and juice like we talked about
water
earlier.
I feel like water is the answer to everything. Anytime I don't feel well, I'm like, I've gotten to the point where just drink water.
You know
just
what I think the water. Answer to everything is? Like I always joke, like if I was ever to do a comedy bit, like I think the answer to everything is a shower. Shower cures it. You know? You're not feeling good. You're a little stomachache. Take a shower. You're tired. Take a shower.
Yeah.
You got a little bit of muscle stiffness. Take a shower.
That's true.
I don't know. Anyhow. So, but anyhow, obviously things like quitting smoking, quitting vaping, reducing alcohol. That's a big one. Alcohol is very much associated with high blood pressure. Oh. So people that drink even moderately. So, which, you know, is just less than like one drink a day for women, less than two for a day for men, or less than three for women on one occasion. Those are things that can help with blood pressure management as well. And exercise.
And exercise. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. It's, so I was going to ask, exercise can really help that as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's all these healthy lifestyle things. And again, we talk about the 80-20, 90-10 rule. If majority of the time you're leading a healthy lifestyle, you're getting regular cardiovascular exercise, you're eating your fruits and vegetables and lean protein, you're not eating processed food, you're maintaining a healthy weight, you're drinking water throughout the day. If you're doing those things right, then chances are you'll have more likelihood of having normal blood pressure. And then there's also a genetic component. Some people do everything right. And this is when people get upset. They're like, I do everything right and my blood pressure is still high. I don't want them to feel bad. It's not like you failed. We have genes. Like there are certain things we're predisposed to that other people aren't. And so genetically, you might just be predisposed to high blood pressure and that's okay. You didn't fail. It means that you just might benefit from the advances in the pharmaceutical industry and be, you know, take a medication like a water pill and manage it. So that's when it's like, try lifestyle first, but if lifestyle's not working and you're doing your absolute best, or if you just can't adhere to that healthy lifestyle, that's when you need to talk to your doctor and be like, okay, how can pharmacotherapy help me?
What did I hear you correctly? A water pill?
So we call them a water pill. So it's like you're saying water's the cure to everything. They even now have a water pill.
Give me the pill.
It's so funny. Like I take for the same way when you talk about the stock market and you talk about the market, you take for granted certain vernacular and how we speak, you know. So a water pill is a diuretic. It's a pill that you take that helps your body flush out extra water.
But I thought the issue is I don't have enough water. I'm always trying to drink more water. Why would I take a diuretic?
Well, water, drinking water actually works like a diuretic. So when you drink more water, it forces your kidneys to therefore flush out more water.
Oh.
So it's interesting. It's kind of, it's not intuitive necessarily, but yeah. So the first drug we often choose when someone has high blood pressure is a diuretic or what's called a water pill. And it simply works by causing your kidneys to flush out more sodium and water.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How do you then get hydrated?
Yeah. So it's
everything right.
Interesting. I mean, it's a difference between having too much sodium and water in your blood vessels versus your cells. It's different. So you can still be hydrated without having excess fluid load pushing against your blood vessels.
Got it. Okay. Okay. A lot there.
It's confusing. I mean, I take it for granted because it's something that I've just, yeah, it's something I've practiced and done and talked about for 20 years, but but we forget that for other people, it can become sometimes confusing when you're, especially when you try to have a patient visit with somebody and an average family doctor, it's 5 minutes. The person walks out of there confused. Well, no wonder
yes.
why.
Yeah. Well, and I think, and I hope that that's why this podcast will be helpful to people. It's information and it's a conversation and I can ask the questions and vice versa. So it's many things I don't know about. And you're right. When you are in the doctor's office, you don't even think about all this. And then you leave and you're like, what does that actually mean?
Yeah.
Okay. So that was one of our classroom items for today. The other one is you asked me a little bit about, or to address, what's the difference between fixed income and equities?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad we're doing this because I think it's important to kind of start top down when we think about investing and what we can invest in. And I think we've made it somewhat knowledgeable that there's so much to invest in, and that's also difficult. So, but let me just start from the top down in terms of what are investable asset classes. Let's start with asset classes, and then we can go into fixed income and equities. And I'm going to try to do this, you know, briefly. So investable asset classes, and each has unique characteristics, very different risks, and therefore very different potential returns. And also different liquidity. Liquidity means if I buy something and tomorrow the market crashes, if I want to get out, I want to be able to sell it. There are some asset classes where no, you are locked in. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when we think about equities, what's equity? Those are stocks. We're going to talk about stocks. And that basically just represents an ownership in a company. So you buy a stock, or an ETF, it represents ownership of Coca-Cola or McDonald's or Starbucks or Bank of Montreal or what have you. And the reason why people would buy equities is if you're maybe more of a longer term investor, you want to own this company for a long time. You can also trade it. Mm-hmm. So you're really looking for capital appreciation. You buy it at $10, you hope it goes to $20. And that $10 difference is your gain. And or some of these companies pay what we've called dividends. So if you're a shareholder, they distribute some of the profit to you. That's called a dividend. So you can get dividend income. So in other words, when you're sitting there at home and you're not at work, you can still have your money working for you, making you income in terms of dividends. Now, what's fixed income? Those would be what we would call bonds. So stocks and bonds. Bonds fall under the name fixed income. And fixed means basically you are making a loan to borrowers. So if you say, I'm willing to give you $100 at the end of the time frame that I'm giving it to you, let's call it 5 years for a bond, 5 year bond is what it would be called. They're going to guarantee me at the end of 5 years, I get my $100 back. So at maturity, I get my $100 back. And throughout those 5 years, they will decide how much interest they're going to pay me. So that's called the coupon payment. And so sometimes it'll be 5%, many different reasons as to why it could be 5% or 7% or 3%, but you will earn 5% income on an annualized basis guaranteed, as long as the company doesn't default, for the next 5 years. So therefore you get your money back and you've earned 5%. So it provides regular interest payments.
Can I ask you a question? So when you're following your portfolio, and let's say you have a fixed income ETF, and when it's in the red, when it's down, mm-hmm. what is that? Does that mean that their interest payments have gone down?
No, and that's a good question. So sorry, do you own a fixed income ETF?
I believe I do.
Okay. So I have different views on what I like to own within fixed income.
Okay.
And I don't love, it's okay to own fixed income ETFs. It's totally fine. What that is, that's the price of the bond moving around.
Okay. So what other people are willing to pay for that bond.
It's what they're willing to pay, but it's also the bond is, it's essentially corporate debt or government debt or whatever debt it is. And the prices are very much affected by interest rates. And it's an inverse relationship. So when interest rates go down, the value of the bond goes up and vice versa. If interest rates are going up, the value of the bond goes down. And so, but that's one aspect that affects the prices. Other aspects could be if you had a company and they had a credit rating downgrade, that will affect the price of the bond as well. So many, we can do a bond section.
I think so. It's confusing. I find equities and stocks easy to understand.
Yes.
I find bonds more difficult to understand. I mean, I know they're loans, but in terms of how they
trade
and pay and we can talk about it and how it compares to then a GIC.
Right.
Bond versus GIC. So at the fixed income portion of a portfolio, I find a little bit more difficult to understand.
For sure. And we can get into that. And we will. To your point, though, the bond market globally is $128 trillion. The value of bonds in the world, $128 trillion. It is much larger than the equity market. The equity market's around $95 trillion. So it is a bigger market, and there's so many different components to it. When I worked at Deutsche Bank, we actually ended up taking over the JP Morgan building on Wall Street. Huge building. The fixed income floors, they're basically the size of ice rinks. We had a couple of fixed income floors, okay? Versus the equity floor was basically one floor. Still the same size as an ice rink, but one versus like three. So it is much more complex. We'll get into that and those options. But in terms of investable asset classes, we talked about equities, we've got fixed income, we've got cash and cash equivalents. That's where you'd find your GIC. Okay. So guaranteed investment certificate. Again, you will get your money back and you will get a smaller coupon or a smaller interest payment in general than you would in a bond. Less risk. If something's more guaranteed.
Well, why wouldn't you get your money back in a bond if you're loaning?
You do.
So, okay.
If you hold it to maturity.
Got it.
Okay. You have to. It matures what's called at par. Par means one or 100. Mm-hmm. So if you buy a bond at, call it 95, it's called 95 cents on the dollar. But if you bought, so think about it as if you buy a bond at $95, because you're not buying a 95 cent bond, $95, it will mature at par. You will get that capital gain of $5 and you will get your interest income.
Got it.
Okay. But remember how we said that the higher the value of the bond price, the lower the interest rate.
Mm-hmm.
You can also, or not necessarily, the coupon could be higher. I shouldn't say that. You can also buy bonds when they're at 105, so $5 above par. But you might like the coupon, or there might be something else that you like about it that will compensate you for paying $5 over what it will mature at, right? Or you buy it at 105 and you think it's going to 110. So in the fixed income market, people who are fixed income investors, like true portfolio managers, they'll buy it at 105 all day long, thinking that based on the fundamentals of that bond, it's going to 110. They're going to make that $5 spread. Yeah. So that's how they're managing those ETFs. That's how a fixed income portfolio manager manages it as well. If it's just you and me on our own, not trading, which I won't trade bonds, then you might hold it to par and then collect your income.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah.
It's complicated.
I mean, it's complicated. It makes sense. I understand it on a macro level, but I'm still not as confident on it. I know that, a lot of people will look at your how risk tolerant or risk averse you are. And they'll say to you, you know, what is you, how, and then they'll say, that's how you decide how much your portfolio should be in equities versus fixed income. Mm-hmm. And the less risk tolerant you are, they say, well then, and, or the older you are, then the more you should go towards fixed income versus the more, you know, if you're willing to take risk, then you want to be a little bit more equity weighted, correct? Right.
Correct. But I would say that when you have a fixed income manager managing your fixed income portfolio versus just mm-hmm. buying a bond, mm-hmm. they, just like an equity, like a stock manager, can make mistakes.
Yeah.
Right? Because yeah. they're buying and selling bonds all yeah. day long, and they got to get the credit risk right. They got to get the country risk right, because you can buy bonds in Venezuela, you can buy bonds in Argentina, so depending on, they can also make mistakes, just like equity managers can make mistakes, and your performance won't be as good. So that's why when you see it in the red, you're like, what's going on here? I thought it's fixed
yeah.
income.
Yeah, okay? It's confusing. Yeah.
Yeah, but we'll do more on fixed income. So you've got your cash and cash equivalents, also investable asset classes, real estate, so you can buy hard real estate, obviously, that you own the building or you own your home. And then you can also buy real estate that's traded on the market, which would be, you can buy storage units, like look, or storage companies. Look at how much storage has increased. You can buy, they're called REITs, real estate investment trusts. Mm-hmm. So stocks that represent storage, malls, office. So it's a huge area, even within real estate. Then you've got commodities that you can invest in. So gold and silver, like we talked about. You can also invest in foreign exchange, so currencies. And then you can also invest in crypto and also alternative investments, which would be non-traditional. So hedge funds, private equity. So that doesn't trade. So not a lot of liquidity there. You have to kind of hold it for 7 to 10 years. Venture capital, same thing. And then also collectibles. Those are all under alternatives. So it's a huge shopping list.
Yes.
I'm going to put it in shopping terms.
Well, we can think about it like that. Like, you know, when someone's just telling you what you should have in your wardrobe.
Yeah.
You know, it's yes. like what you should have. What are your basics, you know, that yes. you need to have? And then what are like the fancy, you know, the evening gowns of your wardrobe? So, you know, it's.
That's a good way together. To think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, your basics would be fixed income, cash and cash equivalents, and equities. Mm-hmm. So, Melissa, in terms of delving into this a little bit further, in the respective time, let's just real brief. You got your fixed income and you've got your equities. And within, let me just do equities right now. So as we talked about, that represents ownership in a company. So that's when you buy stocks or shares. You're looking for capital appreciation. So that means you buy it at 10, you hope it goes to 20, and then you get, mm-hmm. you know, 10 bucks. The risk can be higher, but the return can be higher. It's influenced by the company's performance. So obviously Netflix is doing very well, so the stock goes up. It is also affected by market trends. Everybody wants to own tech companies. So Netflix falls under that techie-oriented area of the market. And it's also affected by economic conditions. Stocks are. Netflix is probably going to increase prices, right? Can people afford that? Can they afford it? What's the economy doing? That's why, you know, we start the conversation by looking at the market, looking at the economy. Makes sense?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I think when any, this is just one of my rules, when any company becomes a verb, I want to own it. In other words, I'm going to Netflix and chill. I want to own it. I'm going to Google something. I want to own it. I'm going to Uber there. I want to own it.
Exactly. You're right.
Pervasive.
Let's leave it at that for now, just so we can go on and do some follow-up. So one of the things that was interesting in our follow-up from last week is Ozempic and hair loss. What are we seeing?
So a lot of people at the beginning, they were talking about Ozempic face. What's Ozempic face? And what they were referring to with that is when people lose a lot of weight, and especially when they lose a lot of weight quickly, they lose fat from the face as well, and they look older or aged. And all of a sudden, now they've got saggy skin because our fat takes up space under our skin. And when you remove that fat, the skin can fall and hang, especially when it happens quickly. So that was one thing. Now we're seeing Ozempic hair. So what does that mean? It means, again, when you lose weight, again, particularly when you lose weight quickly, it can put your hair follicle into something called telogen effluvium, which your hair follicle basically goes into a resting state. And so people notice their hair shedding and thinning, and they're like, what happened? Where did my hair go? Because your body was used to getting all these nutrients. And all of a sudden now your body thinks, uh-oh, I'm losing weight. I'm not getting the same nutrients. Maybe times are tough. Maybe I need to put my energy into preserving other more important things than my hair. So that's sometimes, it's a stress. It's a stress response. So other people can get that condition after a trauma. Some people's hair can fall out. So this, you know, for some people, the weight loss can be a bit of a trauma to the body because the body's just not sure why all of a sudden it's not getting the same thing it was used to getting. And people often think, well, does that mean it's bad for me that I'm losing weight? But I want to explain this to some people. You know, let's say you're a smoker. And you've smoked and smoked, and all of a sudden you quit. At the beginning, you're going to feel worse. That doesn't mean quitting smoking is bad for you. It's just a change in the state that your body was used to. So, you know, when people are used to eating, you know, processed foods and white carbs and all these things, and all of a sudden they stop, they might actually feel worse. You know, you might have to be like tired and not feel good, and you might lose your hair, and you think, what am I doing? This can't be good for me. But actually, it's just your body's, it's a shift to a new status quo. Okay. But it is, you know, there's, go ahead.
What can you do about it?
So, okay, there's lots of different things to do for the hair. So first of all, you can start off with, so there's a product called minoxidil topical. You know, they used to sell it. I think it's still one brand is Rogaine that people might've heard about. So they sell this topical minoxidil. You can buy it online. They even sell it on Revolve in like a more girly kind of formula way. So you can use that topically. There is also red light therapy that we can talk about later that some people think helps. You can do PRP. So PRP is platelet-rich plasma. So basically we take someone's blood, we spin it in a centrifuge, and we separate the platelet-rich plasma, and we take that. And then it looks like a yellowy golden kind of serum, and it's rich in growth factors, nutrients. So then we inject that into the scalp, and that can sort of stimulate things. Microneedling can help. So those are different, you know, ways that you can sort of address it. Or you can go for the hair extensions,
which
are huge business. They used to be so uncommon, and now all of my, I mean, I wear them. A lot of my friends wear hair extensions, whether they're clip-ins for a night out or whether it's a sewn-in weft or all sorts of different things that you can do to temporarily bridge that gap. Well, because eventually the hair does grow back. So, you know, and also vitamins and supplements, and make sure you're eating a balanced diet. So the first thing you want to look at it and get talk to your doctor and get your blood checked, because sometimes it can be from an iron deficiency. Sometimes it could be also your thyroid's gone out of whack. So before we just assume, oh, I've lost weight and I've lost my hair, definitely see your doctor about it, because there are certain things you'd want to check to make sure that it's not something medical going on that's causing it, and that there's not something you could take supplement wise.
I think too, you know, a lot of women, we are going to touch on menopause within these podcasts, but I think that a lot of people have found thinning hair. I used to have so much hair. I don't have as much as I used to. And I do want to do the PRP. However,
well, the hair just changes spots.
What's that?
The hair just changes spots.
What do you mean?
People get less hair on their head, but more on their chin.
Oh, great.
So that's something to look forward to.
Exactly. Don't know that I have that one yet. But I hear that PRP is so painful on the head.
So I haven't done it to myself. Although I'm sure you know what, I will, and I can report back, because I think it's a regenerative good thing. I mean, PRP is great. I mean, you're getting growth factors. A lot of athletes use it for sports injuries.
Right.
So when they get a tendon rupture, we also use it on the face. So if you've ever heard of vampire facial, we do the PRP, we get this platelet-rich plasma, then we microneedle the face. So we create these little micro channels. And then put the PRP on top so it seeps in. We can also inject it under the skin, and it helps to build collagen. and stimulate, like it just rejuvenates your skin. Well, the same thing for the hair. It does. The difference is with the face, we can put a numbing cream all over the face first.
Which I've done, and I can handle that. But the head, I don't know if
the head, you can't put numbing cream on. But I've done it to a lot of people, and they seem fine. I mean, I mean, they're definitely not, you know, but it seems tolerable. I mean, laser hair removal is painful also, but people tolerate it. Some people take in advance. I tell them to take 2 extra strength Tylenol before they come in. Yeah.
I want to do that. I'll try it.
Definitely.
You do it at the Wellness House.
Mm-hmm. We do it at Wellness House and my office. Yep.
Okay. Also just one other follow-up item. Last week we talked about buying Tesla 2 weeks ago, or we filmed it ahead of the Tesla robo-taxi event. And as I had mentioned, because we filmed it ahead, I said, sometimes when you have these big events, you can have what's called sell the news. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened to Tesla stock. It was down by about 10%. I bought it prior. I don't really care. I'm buying this for the long term. And the play on AI with respect to Tesla. But just so people know, hey, you know, if they looked at the stock, then it was down 10. It was a sell on the news. It was underwhelming to the analyst community. Analysts are the people who
Well, they hyped it up. And this is why I wasn't, I mean, we talked about this, and if I'm going to use, you know, market lingo or whatever, I was bearish on it because they hyped it all up. But I still think we're far away from a lot of what they promised in terms of the self-driving cars and how, I mean, I know they're already there, but how pervasive they're going to be. And again, when I looked at some of the videos that came out of it with all these robots walking around and the robo-van, did you see that? Or what he's calling it, the robo-van? Yeah. Robo-van. I don't know who on earth is going to drive that.
Right.
Because, you know, it was funny because after that, I started following Zuck on Instagram.
And Mark Zuckerberg?
He has his own account now. Zuck. They call him Zuck, which has made him way cooler, first of all.
Okay.
And by calling him Zuck, and he's grown out his hair, and all of a sudden, like, he was the biggest, nerdiest guy. It's sort of like that Jeff Bezos transformation, right? Super nerdy looking. Now he looks more cool. And him and his wife, there was some post about how they were talking to Porsche about making a minivan. Right. And I looked at that minivan, and I was like, that's something a mom would drive. You know, because it was practical and it was bigger. You want to drive a minivan because it's so practical, but they just look so uncool. Well, this one looked awesome and aspirational. Whereas that robovan, I don't mean like, what am I going to like show up to carpool in this like silver triangular?
Lots of room.
Yeah. Anyhow, I don't want to say, I mean, it might be cool one day. And I do also think that like, what the company can do and the potential for the company is phenomenal. And like you said, you're not a trader. You're not buying it to sell it the next day. No. And if you're investing like that, well, then you are going to be going to your doctor for antidepressants because your mood's going to go up and down and it's crazy. But if you're investing in a company because you think it's awesome and it will be great for the long run, then who cares about these little sell the news blips and, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Another kind of vernacular on Wall Street is like, I'm a big buyer of, right? XYZ. I'm a big buyer of Elon.
Right.
You know, and we have exposure to Starlink and SpaceX. So I'm continuing the theme. And to go back to what we talked about in terms of investable assets, SpaceX and Starlink, they're private. It's not publicly traded.
Yeah.
Right. So that's, again, that's alternative assets, alternative investments, just to kind of put that into perspective. Just to move it on here, I am curious about, and I did open an account. Again, it's very easy. I think you wanted to mention another trading platform. I don't know if you did. Wealthsimple, did you?
Okay, no? We talked about, because we were talking about our fees the same across all the different trading platforms, and Wealthsimple, I believe they have no fee trades. I mean, obviously, I'm not an expert on all these different platforms, but I think when you do decide on where you're going to open up your account, and don't let making the decision put off starting. Like, don't think about, because you can't decide if you should do, you know, TD Web Broker or Wealthsimple, or don't let that then leave you in indecision land and do nothing. Like, just pick one. They're all good. They're all just different.
Yeah.
You
it's
know,
about getting started.
Yeah. But I do think, because we were talking about some of the differences, and I do think those are no fee trades. But if you're someone like me that doesn't trade very often, I don't know if that's necessarily
relevant. Fees always do. Yeah, it might not be your driving force, but fees are something to look at for sure.
Definitely.
I also think it's important to your point, just get started. My mother started her own TFSA account and RSP in her 60s. She's 88, has an online trading account.
Yeah, that's so great.
Just start.
And even when can you start it? Can you open one up for your kids then at 18?
18.
Okay. So. Yeah.
And it's something you can do together. You can learn together.
I think that's so important. Like, I'm very fortunate, and I never realized how lucky I was that my dad talked to me about this. You know, I think a lot of parents don't talk to their kids about investing, or think it's like taboo to talk about money. And I think especially a lot of fathers don't talk to daughters about it. And I'm lucky that, I mean, and he isn't a trait, like he's not a finance, but still just even starting the conversation with me, helping me understand that it's something I should do and that it's important. I benefited from that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm curious, a little bit curious, and then we're going to be kind of some time. We're going to wrap this in about 5. Red light therapy. I've done the red light therapy bit. Again, this is like my group of guy friends in the States, and they do this once a week. This red light therapy bit, I found one place just outside of Toronto that I've used, and I was having significant back pain going back a number of months ago. And I went from significant back pain to I could handle it after the red light therapy bit. So what do you see it doing for people?
Again, red light is, again, one of these like alternative treatments. It's not as evidence-based. It's so red light, it's a spectrum. It's a wavelength of light. It's red, right? As opposed to blue light, which is on the other end, or ultraviolet, or, you know, so red light is long wavelength light, which penetrates deep into the skin and is supposed to have benefits on collagen stimulation, and it increases mitochondria in the cells to help with cellular function and cellular repair. And so the main areas it's been used in is skin to help with tightening, wrinkles, rosacea, just giving the skin a more youthful, psoriasis, eczema. So that's what, there you go. Funny that, like, let me show you mine.
Oh, you have your
mask. I'll show you mine if you show me yours. Yeah. So, so this is mine. It's just a little,
fancy.
Yeah. So you turn it on. The reason I got it is because it just sits on my desk. I don't know. I can't turn it on right now, but it sits on my desk at work.
Yeah.
And it will just put the red light on my face. I don't know. I'm not totally sold if it's doing anything, but I don't think it's doing any harm. Mm-hmm. And so if I can benefit from some red light shining on me, then why not? Some people swear by it. And it's also been said to help with inflammation. So like sometimes when you get certain treatments, like I know some doctors, when they do procedures on the face that can cause a lot of swelling, they'll use red light after to decrease the inflammation. And also for pain. It can help with, you know, pain and sports injuries. So some people love it. And again, it's not the dangerous type of light. So when people think about red light beds, they think like, are those tanning beds? Are those dangerous? But it's not. That the dangerous tanning beds are UV light. This is different. This is red light. It doesn't cause skin cancer. It's not dangerous. I mean, obviously you want to protect your eyes, which is interesting because some say you do have to, some say you don't. This particular one I have says you don't have to wear goggles with it, but anyhow. Yeah.
No, I think it's so interesting. Again, these people, you know, investors I met a couple of weeks ago, they have an infrared sauna, and within the infrared sauna, they have these red light therapy panels.
Yeah. I love it.
They're doing everything at once, like very efficient people.
Yeah. At Wellness House, we have an infrared sauna and an ice plunge. And there's lots of data coming out about the benefits of sauna and heat, steam therapy and sauna therapy. And then red light, if you're doing this treatment, you know, again, this is the alternative stuff. So you want to be doing all the basic stuff first, like we talked about with the basics, the same way we talk about investing. But this is some additional stuff that you can do. But don't just rely on this for your health if you're not dealing with the basics. Yeah.
Exactly. So. Melissa, just to kind of wrap it up a little bit here, just, you know, some stocks that I'm, well, two things. One, I've had people ask me and that, you know, or tell me that they go into the bank and that they are, you know, they've got some cash. They don't know what to do with it. The bank teller is saying, well, you've got GICs at 2-year, 3-year, 5-year. It's this percent, that percent. And they don't know what any of this really means. Yeah. What's your knowledge of walking into your bank, you've got cash in your account, and what do you do with it?
So it's like you said about the cash. So the cash that I have in my account is the cash that I need to live on. It's for my daily expenses. So I keep enough cash in my account for my budget for, you know, what I need for groceries and shopping and my kids' programs, which cost a fortune, and, you know, all these different things. Mm-hmm. And then, so I try to keep the amount I need in my account, the amount I actually need to spend for that month. And it keeps me on budget. Mm-hmm. Then if I have extra cash, I want to be putting it into my investment accounts. Mm-hmm. So this is when you talk about liquidity. So if I know, well, this is the amount that I normally need to spend per month, but you know what? I actually want to do a renovation in my backyard. And you know what? My daughter's going to have a big party next year and that's going to cost me money. I need to keep money handy. Mm-hmm. So with that handy money, that's where I would look at. I don't want to get it stuck in a GIC that it's locked in for, you know, or something that I can't pull it out of. I don't mm-hmm. want to put it in a stock for, because then I want to have to be forced to sell it when it's low. So I keep a little bit of cash on hand mm-hmm. for that. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because I was just talking about this with my RSP and I was thinking it makes zero sense to have cash in your RSP because the last place that I'm going to want to pull money out of right. is your RSP, right? Because right. you're taxed, you get taxed on it. Yeah. So in that account, that's where I need the least liquidity, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Anyhow, it's a big conversation, but I think generally speaking, people have a TFSA that's easier to pull money in and out of. Mm-hmm. They have an RSP that you want to try to not take your money out of. Mm-hmm. You have your spending account that you want to be able to budget yourself with. And then extra, you want to put in something that's, you know, mm-hmm. somewhat liquid, like a high interest savings account. Okay, great. I can take it out at any time.
Right. Well, and I also think too, though, I do use GICs when I don't necessarily know what I want to invest in. And also yes. because the interest rates have been higher as of late, they've been coming mm-hmm. down. But, you know, I was able to lock money away for, you know, 5% plus. So that to me in an That's uncertain good. World, guaranteeing me 5% for a year or however long it was, made sense to me because of the risk return profile. I'm like, I guaranteed 5%. We don't know where the world and the wars are going. I'll do it. So right now, just so people understand, a 1 year GIC, I got these rates last week. So they could be lower now, but a 1 year was 3.65. 1 year, okay, GIC. If you wanted to be able to cash it in, okay, with before 1 year, it was 3.4%. So they're giving you a little bit less return, but you can cash.
That's not a big difference. Oh, so there you go. That's great. So that would be a good place to put money that you might need to pull up. Yeah,
exactly. And then also interestingly, for 6 months, because remember, we're expecting the U.S. Federal Reserve to lower rates. We're expecting Bank of Canada to lower rates. So the rates that are further out, 2, 3, 5 mm-hmm. years, are lower than they are today. So a 6 month rate is 4.05%, 4% versus 3.5% for a year. Because people are expecting rates are going to be lower. Okay. So therefore the banks lend at a lower rate.
Right.
So for my friend who asked me this question, and that's why we talk, you know, start top down, big picture. What's the economy looking like? What are the central bankers doing? And that translates into what the bank's going to give you for a GIC and or what they're paying you in your savings account. It all is connected and interconnected.
Yeah. I mean, we have to wrap the conversation because I have to go to pick up now. But I love that we're talking about this. I love that we're just, even if people are still, even if you understand 10% or take a little bit away, that you're just getting in the conversation and getting in the game and starting to think about understanding, that's what people mean when they say, get your money working for you, get your money mm-hmm. making money and all these other things. And, you know, all of a sudden the purse doesn't look like as good of an investment.
Totally. It just doesn't.
It just doesn't. Yeah.
I like the premium outlet malls too.
Yeah.
You know, okay, so we're going to wrap it. I am going to come in. I still have to come in for my blood work mm-hmm. and PRP.
I'm going to let me do your hair.
Yes, please. Okay. And I am going to get a blood pressure machine. That's and good. Melissa, I've got to get that AED
yes.
That, so for everybody who can remember, it's the portable defibrillator, but mm-hmm. I need the brand and the make.
Okay. I'll bring it to you next time. Maybe I'll just bring it home with me so I can show you. Or I'll take a picture. Yeah, we can post it.
Yeah, we'll post it. Okay. All right. Episode 3. That's a wrap.
A wrap.
All right. Bye, everybody.